This programme was produced at and first aired on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, with support from New Zealand On Air. Ka pai, irirangi te motu, MPR. If you're enjoying this podcast in Manawatu, you could make your very own, just like this one. MPR exists to help people like you tell your story or share your passion on air and online. Check out mpr.nz for more information.
Welcome to Manawatu Conversations, recollections of the past and sometimes opinions about the future. Today I have with me
Rosalie Hunter,
Diane McConnell,
and I'm Stuart Burks.
Now, Rosalie, you and your husband Brian were involved from the very beginning with the Coach House Museum in Feeling.
When we moved off the farm at Utawai, there'd been talk of trying to form a museum in Feeling. And they seemed to get a group together who had been very associated with horses and horse-drawn vehicles and things. And Brian, with some other people, formed a small committee of about eight, and they started thinking. We had this group of people who had raised collections of the old vehicles, but they were in people's sheds all over the place, and they said if we didn't gather these together in a place, they were going to be lost. They were either in somebody's old shed where the birds were dropping on them, and you know, they were needed to be kept for perpetuity, really. And so they formed this group, and we had it started looking then for a place to have as a museum, and that was quite hard. And we didn't start with any money, you know, and how are we going to get somewhere to start a museum without money? So I think it was Carol Clawson said they would put a donation towards it if we could find somewhere. And we found an old factory in Bowen Street, which was just stone wall, concrete walls and a roof, really. And that's what we started with, planning a museum to get our vehicles together.
So is it a large group doing that?
We had eight on the first committee, and it hasn't really changed much from that original eight, although now we have little side groups off. Some will be care of the archival things, some will be in care of the restoration, some will be in care of the displays, and they formed a whole lot of groups. So there's a big lot of people involved now. And I suppose we were in the Bowen Street Museum for about 10 years. Well, that's off the top of my head, and I might be wrong. And we outgrew it. We had all the stuff being offered to us and nowhere to put it.
Because it was all horse-drawn?
That's what we started with, horse-drawn stuff. But then we started getting a lot of things that were historic in all sorts of different ways. So a room that hadn't been touched at the museum, we put an archive into it. And we opened the archive, and Marilyn Whiteman was sort of the main instigator of that, with her big group of volunteers too. And so then when we decided to shift from Bowen Street to South Street, the archive said, we want to come with you. We don't want to stay there. We want to be associated to the museum. So the next thing was, where were we going to shift to a bigger place? And then the Wool Spinners building came up on South Street, which was just this big, long building with holes in the floor. And I can remember Brian coming home from a meeting deciding that they would like to have that building, but how are they going to purchase it? And the Higgins family, who are very philanthropic people, came on board. And then Brian said, I think I've done my homework, but we're going to need a huge amount of money, and it frightens me. But we slowly took it over. We painted the inside of the museum black for looking at other museums that had black interiors. We felt they displayed quite well. We filled the big holes in on the floor where the machines that had done the wall scouring. We divided the museum up and we had some really good carpenters and we started to decide how we would have our display. And that took a lot of work, planning how we were going to display what we had. We thought all the vehicles stacked just formed one third of the wall. We had this big empty place, and now it's overflowing.
Yeah, but those displays are very well designed. So
they are.
People do, it's amateurs just gradually picked up the methods.
We went about the countryside looking at other museums and how they displayed, and you'd get an idea of, firstly, the content that you could put in, how to display it, what you would need for information for the people looking. And just lots and lots of work from people. And I think it was a chap Little, now I can't remember his name, he did a lot of the bigger backgrounds for the displays for us. Like behind the forestry entrances, looks like a bush scene, but it's actually just photographs. Brian took the photographs and they blew them up enough to make it look like forest.
Yeah.
And it just slowly came into several main themes. One of them we put up as focusing on the shearing, focusing on the wool history of Fielding, because there'd been a lot of big sheep farms here and very well-known ones. So we had an auction, and we auctioned the right to for farmers to have their wool brand displayed. And we raised an awful amount of money for that because farmers bid against each other to have their wool bale display up. And we built stuffed wool bales with paper and so got some real-looking bales, and those ones were the prime offers for our display. And then we built the shearing board and we had the shearing machines, and it just grew like that, really. That things were handed to us from the community that you could use for your theme that you were working on.
So you publicised what you wanted to do, and that...
Well, just word of mouth. Just word of mouth. The Colleton Young Farmers did a lot for the wool display with the shearing board and the old machines that that we have, and big wool baskets and things, and it was just marvellous. And that's really how the different displays then. A gentleman from down north of Otaki, can't think of it, he comes from Forest Lakes, I think it's called, he donated all his vehicles, which were green tractors. And they were in pristine...
The John Deere, is it?
Oh, John Deere, Deere tractors. And they're in pristine condition. He had them all renovated and built back to like they would have been new. And they came and they filled up. And I remember filled up a good part of the museum. And I remember we did a questionnaire to people who came. Which part of the museum do you like best? Because I thought it was getting too top-heavy and John Deere. And the horse-drawn. But I missed out. The John Deere display was very, very much liked.
Well, I suppose to probably bring back more memories for younger people than the horse-drawn.
Yes, I think so.
Yeah.
It's a lot of people have no knowledge of the horse-drawn things, and you go in and see something set up and it's been put up incorrectly, and Brian would go along and say, just put the leather work on the floor, I'll dress the horse for you. Don't know, there are lots of skills have been lost.
It's actually, it's quite sort of scary when you walk into a museum and see all these things that you're familiar with from an earlier time. But then you think for children, then
you know, say to them, well, they did this 30 years ago, and a 10-year-old would think, 30 yes. years ago.
A lifetime, lifetime, yeah. so old.
Yeah,
yeah. No, but it's when we used to do duty, Brian, because he wasn't so physically capable at that time, nearly always stood at the counter and welcomed people, and I would start to take them through the museum and say, well, you know, this is how it's laid out. You enjoy your visit. If there's any questions... And then when they came out, I'd just question them, you know, what part of the museum did you like best?
Yeah, yeah.
So you could see that you would know if they'd enjoyed that, they'd probably enjoy something similar about another aspect of life.
Yeah, yeah. Mm. So you charge for entry to the museum?
Yes,
now?
We do.
Yeah, and how long has that been? Okay.
I think we started charging virtually once we felt we got South Street set up.
Okay.
Because we wanted to have a big mural on the wall, on the outside wall, and Joe McManaman did it for us, and it just weaves its way along the wall, sort of showing the history, you know, starting from the surveyors in the bush to the farming to the flight of the top dressing and all those sort of things. So it has a continual line on it.
Yeah. Okay.
But yes, I think we started charging virtually after we opened.
Yeah. Okay. And you get many visitors?
They do get quite a lot of visitors. Yeah. It's starting to build up. After COVID, we really wondered how long we were going to be able to keep going. But after COVID, it took a little while, and then it's starting to build up again now. That plus we're having more functions in the museum. We had only just... had visitors and nothing else, but now we have classes for children to learn some of the old skills that families have done to, you know, to make butter and have a shave with a shaver and all sorts of things, dress up in costumes.
This is amateur, just people get together. Yeah.
Okay. I used to take one on setting a table. And that was really fun, you know. Classes would come in and boys would walk in with their hat on, and I'd say, well, we really can't do anything at the table until hats are removed.
Yeah.
And they said, look at me. Mm-hmm. No. So you put your hat over there and you can have it back when you go out. And then what did you need to do to set a table? So you took it, I took it right back to the old time when they had a quiet cloth, which was sort of something underneath your tablecloth, then your tablecloth, and then a nice cloth on the top.
Okay.
Then how did you set each person's place? The children have no idea.
So this is what you do on the front when you had all the shearers or whatever coming for a meal. You'd set the table like
that? Yes, I do. I still sit at the table on my own.
No, but I mean you'd have the table all set with the...
Yes.
Cloth. Okay.
No, you had to have everything ready to go because the shearers only had an hour for their lunch.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
They came in, had a wash, sat down, argued, went.
Mm-hmm.
So what's your involvement now? On a sort of daily, weekly, monthly?
Weekly. I still go to the Smoko.
Mm-hmm.
We went on a trip to... Our son was living in Calgary. And we went on a trip to Calgary to see them when they went back to live there. And I had had a pen friend in Rimby, who was much further north, about 2 hours further north of Calgary, and wrote to them. Well, I came to Andrew's wedding. That was when we first met them. And then when we were going back to see Andrew, they said, well, any time you're over here, come and see us. And we went... The first time was Andrew and Kerry were married in January with snow about that thick on the ground. And our pen friend rang and said, come up and see us. I said, but it's snowing. No, the roads will be open. You'll be right. Come up and see us. And so we went up to see them. And Carl was of Dutch descent, but Helen was an American, a Canadian. And Carl said to Brian at night when we were having a meal, I'm going out in the morning. We've got a little museum that we have for international trucks. Would you like to come with me? We don't have breakfast at home. We have it at the museum. And so Brian said, oh, yes, I'd like to do that. So they went off to the museum and they came on home laughing and talking about stories that had been told, the things that had happened, the lovely breakfast they'd had and all. And when Brian came back, he said, I think we'll try and start that with our museum, have something one day a week.
Yeah.
And I said, well, I'm not going to cook a meal for breakfast because I was working then. But he said, we'll have a morning tea. And so we started it and we had about 8 people come to the first morning tea. And it was really good because we could put out items we'd been given and say, what's that been used for, who would have used it, and I would take all the notes about it so that it could be put in the archive. And we really got it to where we would hear people say, oh, my doctor's told us you have something on at the coach house that they thought we might like to come to. And so we started getting a group of retirees who came in. And they were just wonderful because everybody has something to share or talk about or tell a yarn about often. And it's been just wonderful. We had a whole lot of 90-year-olds, and if they came in, another lady and I would always say, what would you like to drink? And we'd make their cup of tea for them, and they'd go and sit down because quite a few of them are a bit shaky. And they used to just love it to have time to relax, time to talk about something out of sight of their life at home. And it's really grown well, but we grew out of the room that we had. And we heard whispers about, you'll have to cut your numbers or we'll shut you down. And so that got me with my back up properly. I said, over my dead body, you're not going to shut this down.
And this was in the museum?
Yes.
Okay. It's,
we've got a room called the Hunter Room, which they dedicated to us.
Yes.
And it can take about 60 people, I suppose, but we got up to where we were squeezing in 80. And they just said it wasn't safe.
I know that room. That would be packed.
It was packed tight. And anyhow, COVID came along. And so we were shut down for quite a long time. And the 90-year-olds never came back.
They got very wary, I think.
Yes, one man who was really just a goldmine of information about the olden day farming. He said, no, I don't want to come back being amongst people again.
Yes, there is. Yeah.
And so we lost all the 90-year-olds and we got down to about 40 in our group.
Which is manageable.
Yes, it is much more manageable.
It means more can talk, I suppose.
Yes, yes, it does. And now we've seemed to have got, we've got a group who are retired Air Force people and they bring an interesting side to the museum, which is totally foreign to a lot of us, you know. Yeah, they'd talk about this this plane that had been reformed, and they'd bring little videos that they show us of air displays and things, and it's really interesting.
Yeah. Now, is it from that group that Brian sort of lined up a lot of people to record when I was recording 10 or more years ago?
Okay,
so there'd be a whole load of new people there.
Yes, there's a whole load of new people there.
Well worth recording.
Yes, it is.
Yeah. And you've got quite a few old recordings in the archives. Do they plan to do things with those, do you know? Or are they just being stored for them?
Well, Denise, do you know Denise from the archives? She used to work at Massey, I think.
Oh, okay.
And she filed them away. And the couple who are now doing... I don't know how many they're still doing, but they don't know the people, and I think they've found it very hard.
Yeah.
Whereas Brian was really fortunate. He could say, I know this one, this one, this one. They're related to that, so they do this. Okay. And he could have lots of information before they brought them along. And Brian would always go and sit in with them.
Yes, that's right.
So he could prompt.
If
need be.
Yeah, just one or two were a bit... Well, actually, one or two who were relatively quiet. There'd often be sort of a younger son who came along as well.
Yes, that's right. Yes.
Yeah.
No, I know Brian interviewed a past mayoress of Fielding.
Oh, and I know. No, and we won't be... Yeah, she had a lot to say.
She should have a lot to say, but they got home from the first night. Brian had hardly walked in the door. She said, Brian, I've got about five more things I can tell you about.
Yeah, precisely so. I was hauled back to do a secondary course. But it was very interesting.
She was a very interesting lady, and she could talk and hold an audience just like that, even till she was in a motorised wheelchair, and she could still hold a conversation and quieten everybody down.
I think that there is one thing that we have to remember while doing some of these recordings. If someone feels they're being asked to give their life story, and I think this is a definitive, it's phenomenally significant for them. So you've got to have a lot of respect for what they're doing and give them the the freedom to.
Oh, Carol was lovely.
Yeah,
she really was.
Yeah, good
fun. No, she gives. She, I first remember her, and she would come along to Institute Birthdays, which was a sort of a yearly celebration, and she'd get up and recite poetry.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a very old thing. We had girls at girls' college that had elocution, so they could recite poetry, but they might have been that much around the school group, very small groups. But
moved away from having to aria when I was at school. You'd be learning whole you know, blocks of poetry or verse or extracts from Shakespearean plays and that sort of thing. I don't think it happened. No. Well, now they're even saying, should we still teach Shakespeare in school?
Yes. Oh, we had the big book we went through in our sixth form year. But no, it's Carol was a real mine of information too, of relationships of people and when they came to Fielding and what they did. Yeah. So she was a... But Brian says, oh, Carol's just rung me and I've got to go back again.
So you were part of the original... Sitting it up right from day one.
Yes.
Who else is still around from those really early days?
Well, Brian Guy, he's not alive now, but he... Not Brian Guy. Graham Guy.
Mm-hmm.
He became the second chairman, and he had a really good knowledge of horses and history and district communities. And then after that came Brian... And Brian did it for 19 years. And then now we've got Brian Guy, who is the chairperson.
Is that the son?
Yes, that's the son. And he does a very good job. He did things differently, but that's just what it's got to be. And you've, when you've,
I see. If someone's volunteering to do something,
he runs a good meeting. Yeah. Yes.
That's a strong continuity of the original flavour, the original essence of it. He's been there for years.
Yes, well, David Stroud was... He actually came on with Brian, but Brian didn't give full time to it until he retired from Totally Vets. Graham got... Brian... Yeah, I've lost that name. David Stroud. Steve Poole was on it. He's passed away. I can't think that there's any of the originals now. Marilyn Whiteman was on the committee for archival things, but she stepped back from that. Now, she still goes and works in the archive regularly, but she doesn't lead the archival group now. So it's... But there's a younger group coming on now.
Good.
You know, they would be... Perhaps some of them in their late 60s, which is good to have.
Yeah, these youngsters, that's what voluntary groups rely on now. Late 60s is the youngsters,
They've, to give the time, they've got to be retired.
Yes.
Now, Brian worked till he was 72, and after that, he really gave full time.
Yeah.
And his boss knew he was working a lot for the museum, because Brian would sort of get to the end of the day about 4 o'clock and he'd go to the museum and go on and do something, you know. But when his boss came here to see him before he died, he said, I knew Brian was doing that, but it was work for the community. And he said he gave a lot of time to Totally Vets.
Yeah,
he'd earned that time.
Yeah.
So it was nice.
Now, social, you mentioned about mayors and the rural community, but were there social hierarchies? Things like, is it Country Women's Institute? Is it if you're the wife of the large landowner, you're in one position, and if you're the wife of a shearer, you're...
I don't think it was. No, I think very egalitarian. Women's Institute offered everybody something, whether you were prepared to be a speaker, which was more my line of things, whether you were prepared to be the person who handled the money, whether you'd be the person who wanted to write the letters for correspondence, whether you wanted to be the person creating the competitions for everybody. I think there was something for everybody. I've spoken about it before when I had my 50 years membership. That was one thing I said. It didn't matter what you did. Everybody had something they were good at. Even if it was the mother that went and looked after all the babies in the supper room.
Which is what you need. You need the diversity.
Yes, you do. And you had the person who could say to you, who was looking at the cooking, no, that's not a pizza. You don't have pineapple on a pizza. Or that's not a scone. You haven't...
Don't have pineapple on a pizza.
I remember we liked pineapple on our pizza, and I made a pizza, and a judge told me, you don't have pineapple on the pizza. You have the tomato base, and you may have some meat base of some sort, and then you might have cheese, but you do not have pineapple on the pizza.
Well, I remember when I got into Chinese cooking, and I found they don't have to have desserts because they throw all that stuff in with the mates. But then you don't have the temptation, you see. I don't know if it was in New Zealand, but certainly in England, you'd have the savoury main, and you've got to finish your main or you won't get the dessert.
Well, that was it. That was all families, I think. But no, I felt in our farming district, Brunswick, where I grew up, they were very much alike, each family, very much the same age. There was only, the only two differences was one was either sheep and beef and one was dairy. That was the only difference I can remember being. But I can't remember being a hierarchy, but I can remember there were some who were the leaders.
But it was a good life.
It was a good life. My father was a leader in the district. I've got photos of him in the Home Guard, and he had a ranking in the Home Guard, and sort of when the Home Guard finished at the end of the war, he started organising the games of cricket or things like that, and he was on the school committee and
the hall committee.
And he always used to say to us, if you ever you are approached about doing a job, you do it.
Thank you for listening to Manawatu Conversations. This and other recent programs can also be found on the Manawatu People's Radio website, and a range of programs is also available on the Manawatu Heritage website of the Palmerston North City Archive. The address for that is manawatuheritage.pncc.govt.nz.
If you enjoy this NPR podcast, please consider subscribing. Our podcasts are available on all major podcasting platforms: Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify, as well as the accessmedia.nz app. Support this show and others like it by giving a donation. For more information, go to www.npr.nz/donate.